Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and I'm excited for another great episode. With me today, I have Scott McLean, and Scott is with Red Dirt Lending and also Red Dirt Leasing. For a couple decades, Scott was in commercial real estate investing with his family and joined the world of single family home investing in 2002. Did some fix and flips, then bought into the franchise home investors, the We Buy Ugly Houses people, and together with his brothers, bought and wholesaled over 300 properties. Since 2007, Scott has owned Red Dirt Lending, where they do hard money loans and have loaned over $70 million on over 500 houses. Scott is now into some new and exciting things also with his business, expanding as always. So, Scott, I'm going to let you kind of take it from there, but I appreciate you joining the show, and I'm excited because I think we're going to learn some good stuff from you.
You bet, Todd. I appreciate you asking me, and I certainly hope so. As a result of being in the hard money lending business, of course, not all of those loans worked out. Sometimes we get houses back, and I was sitting on about 20 houses as a result of being a hard money lender, and decided that I might as well rent them. If nothing else, I can get some income off of them. But I just did the pure rental thing and tried to do the landlording thing myself, and was just really disappointed with the returns. As a matter of fact, when I got my bookkeeper girl in with me, I said, we got to figure out what are we making on this stuff. I actually found out I was losing money. So I thought, well, that's not good. Sorry, I'll unplug that. I said, we got to do something different. So I looked around for different things to do. And as you know, Todd, from attending these RIA meetings over the years, you get all kinds of people who come in and sell their books and tapes and stuff. And I can't remember who. Some customer up there in Minnesota insisted that I go hear Ron LeGrand on a Saturday. And I was going to be in Minneapolis anyways. I said, okay, I'll go. And next thing I know, I'm enrolled in this boot camp in San Jose, California for 3 days. Because I knew enough to know that even if it wasn't as good as he says it would have been, that trying a new model with the rental fleet was a good idea. And so I took it, and anyone who's out there has been to Ron, you kind of have to, you know, take from it what you want and leave the rest. But his core principle on lease option was pretty powerful. So I put that to work in 2013, started converting those 20 houses over from the pure rental model to lease options, a la Ron. And the performance came through. It really started making money, and I got excited about it, and thought, man, if we could get of any size, you know, this could be a better model than hard money lending, because as rich as most people think hard money lenders are, there's still quite a bit of risk involved, market risk and operational and otherwise. Whereas the lease option model, being a landlord, is easier, certainly doing it the way we've been doing it. And so I did that. And so converted those 20. The numbers looked good. Went to a bank, borrowed $1 million to go buy houses after I showed them the performance on that, with the specific intent of putting them into the fleet. Now I'm not just converting bad loan houses into lease options. I'm now going out and buying houses with the intent of putting them in this lease option program, and did that about another 24 or so. So Red Dirt Lending had and still has about that many on a lease option. Then I decided I really ought to rejoin the home investors world, the We Buy Ugly Houses, only because I was interested in doing a volume, and the type of leads you get from that model are perfect fodder as far as the house is concerned for getting the return and doing what we want to do with the lease option business. So I rejoined home investors and went down to Dallas for 5 days of training. And a lot of it was repeat, of course, because we'd done it, you know, the first time we went through training was 2003, and a lot has changed, but the core business is the same. And I just started buying houses. A buddy of mine from high school, actually known him since the fourth grade, had a substantial amount, still does, of course, of family money that he needed to get to work. And I said, well, I got an idea. I can do that for you. But why don't we start a new company and start buying houses in this thing and I'll run this model. I'll do everything. You can be passive, but I want 50% of the company. He said, okay. And fast forward another 9 months and we bought 24 houses in that entity. And one day we close on a 174 house package, believe it or not. So that new company will have something over 200 houses, or just right at 200 houses next week. And it will be my job to start converting those pure rentals into my lease option plan. So that's what I've been up
to. Well, Scott, you've left me with nothing to talk about. I mean, there's nothing there, right? Boy, so...
I did kind of tell the whole story.
No. There's a ton there. So, okay. So let's see. I've got a lot of questions. Why were you were making no money you were losing money with just the rental model. But then right. When you converted them to lease option, you started now making money where it made sense to even go out and buy, 200 more. What's the big difference? What's the catch?
So the catch is it's customary. Repairs and the tenant to pay the rent. That's just how it works. And under landlord tenant law, that's pretty specific and how it ought to work. However, a lease option contract is a different kind of contract that is not regulated by the Landlord-Tenant Act. And what it is we give the tenant buyer an opportunity to buy the house at a specified price for a specified period of time. We never go over 3 years. Usually we're doing 12-month or 18-month option contracts. And the fact that they're getting an option to buy the property is enough of an interest in the house where we don't have to get into this issue of ownership. In other words, 100% of the rent we charge is rent. They are not building up credits. It is not an installment sale. They do put down a non-refundable deposit up front, however, and which is applicable when they buy the house. But if for whatever reason they leave and don't get that done, then they would forfeit that. So that allows us, when they don't pay, to evict versus foreclose, which in Oklahoma at least is a 17-day process instead of, 8 months. So we kind of win either way. We win if they buy because we get some down money up front. We get income while they're renting the place. And if they should happen to convert and buy, then we make a nice windfall on the back end. But the big kicker is the repairs are on them. And so when I started seeing what our repair bill was doing as I converted those 20 from pure rental to lease option, it was astonishing. A lot more falls to the bottom when you don't have to do the repairs.
So are you able to charge market rent with this?
What's basically, the answer is yes. It may be that we're a little bit under market, but it's always a balancing act. And what I mean by that is we start out with how much do you have to put down as a non-refundable deposit. And we explain to them that we want them to put as much as they can down because we want to know they're serious about buying that house. We're really not trying to find the typical renter that tears up your house. We're trying to find people who genuinely want to buy the house to put in there. And we screen them heavily. We send them to a third-party company to run their credit, do the DTI ratio both before and after the proposed sale, criminal background, sexual predator list, all that stuff, because we want to make sure that they are genuine about wanting to buy that house. So did that answer your question?
Yeah. So take me through one of your properties before you put it into a lease option and kind of what that number looked like, and then what it looks like today.
So, gosh, I'm trying to think of a specific property, but I would say there's one on usually in Oklahoma City now. Okay. It's a ARV of $75,000 house. So that's going to be 160 in Minneapolis. But anyway.
So we talking like a just kind of a C area where.
That's right. Okay. That's right. Okay. Blue collar neighborhoods. I do not mind poor neighborhoods at all. I just don't like
high crime.
Lack of. Yeah. Well, pride of ownership is really what we look for.
Yeah, sure.
Now, with this large package, most of them are lower end and in many crime areas, so we'll have to do some adjustments. But for the most part, when we're going into it and we're picking the property we can buy, or we have the opportunity to buy at a discount, obviously, it's fine if it's a poor area. It just needs to have some pride of ownership. You know, if there's three vacant lots, two boarded ups, and what have you, a lot of trash, it's no good. So, but because people, those streets will always be rentals. And, but we do have several lower end properties on lease option now. So,
so
that's the key.
So you've got a property, let's say, what could you rent a three bedroom for? Give me an example of one of your three bedrooms. What could you rent it for? Just on a regular rent.
Probably $750.
Okay. And now with this lease option, what do you get for it a month?
Probably $700 or maybe even $750, possibly $800, and I'll explain that. So when we say, how much do you have to put down? And they say, well, $1,000. And we'll say, well, if that's all you got to put down, then we have to charge a higher rent, and it's going to be $850. We'll still give you the option to buy the house, but it really works better if you can put more down. Now, if someone says they got $5,000 to put down on that house, and keep in mind, our cost on that house is probably 30, 35 maybe, then we're like, okay, well, we can tease that rent back to 650 or even 600 and give you an 18-month lease. There is some work that needs to be done. Are you capable of doing that and get into that conversation? But there is a whole subculture of people out there who are interested in getting into a house. They can't get a loan right now, but they need time to fix whatever their problem is. And so what this does is it bridges the gap. It gives them the time. We actually hook them up with the third-party company to do credit repair if that's their issue. whatever, as you know, there's 100 different scenarios that things need to be done to get you mortgage ready, all of which are curable with time. So we provide that time. And if the company tells us this guy needs 18 months to get mortgage ready, then we'll probably do a 2-year lease in that event, and so on. So the market rent is negotiable. Everything's negotiable. All we publish is the price of the house. So if we're going to ask, and on the price, if it's if we bought it for 35 and it needs 15, 20, and you know, cosmetic, and it'll ARB for 75, and we might ask 74, 69, maybe 79. It just depends on a lot of different factors.
So you're not doing it appraises for 75 today. We're going to sell it for 85 today because it's going to be worth that in 3 years. You're not.
No, we give them the benefit of the improvement, you know?
Yep.
If they put the work in and they make their payments on time and they get themselves in front of a mortgage broker and pull the trigger, hey, they deserve it.
Yeah, no, I like that model a lot. I know a lot of people try to upsell it, and I really don't. I don't like that model as much. So I like the model you guys are doing. So then they take care of all the repairs. They're taking care of the water, the trash, all that kind of stuff. They're taking care of the house, so you have pretty much no monthly fees now. Have you had yet where somebody doesn't buy and you either evict them or they move out? And what does that look like if you have?
Yes. We've got one property. Nikki, who works for me and finds our tenant buyers, just told me we're on our fifth tenant in 3 years. I was like, dang, that house keeps on turning. We've had some buy, but probably only about 15% of the fleet had converted. Now we're only, you know, four years in, and there's many of them that are close. Yeah. But obviously, again, evicting is very easy. We've never had a judge. We haven't even had a customer challenge us. We did have one claim they're going to get a lawyer and say, I thought I was buying the house and you screwed me. And we just had our lawyer send them a letter and we never heard from them again, because that's part of what we do. We put them in front of our attorney at the beginning to make absolute sure that they understand the transaction. Just in that event, because if they did make that claim and if the judge had sympathy for them, and if, then who better than the attorney that closed the transaction to have come and tell them what happened?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's smart. Critical. His sole job is to make absolutely sure they understand what the transaction is. And it's not a closing. It's more like a signing party, but you get the drift.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. So, to
answer your question fully, yes, sometimes we get market rent. Sometimes we get less. Sometimes we get more.
Yeah. The people that leave, though, have you had the house is trashed, or do they usually leave it in pretty good condition?
No, they leave. They treat them as if they own them. It's amazing. I mean, you can, if you came to Oklahoma City and I drove you around, I could show you houses where there's like flowers in the beds and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
It's really a different type of person than the rental, the regular rental deal.
What do you think? Have you charted out the profitability rental versus this? Have you looked at it?
Oh, I can't. I'm not the type of guy who does sophisticated financial spreadsheets, but I can tell you that my sense is that if there are people out there, probably there are people who are going to listen to this podcast who have rentals and who look at the numbers and, you know, they're okay, but it's like, golly, I really thought I'd do better than this. And I think the reason is because everyone underestimates the repair piece. It's human nature to want to believe that you're not going to have as many problems as reality provides. And as a matter of fact, back when I determined that Minneapolis would be a good market to come to for hard money lending, I did a lot of research. And you know who Robert Shiller is of Case-Shiller Index?
Yep.
Okay, so he's the guy, he's half of that team that came up with the Case-Shiller Index, which is does housing prices in the U.S. And I watched a bunch of interviews, and one of them really hit me. They went back 100 years, and they did this in like 1997. They went back 100 years and looked at what houses were selling for 100 years ago. And then they looked at what houses were selling for in 1997. And then they not only put in a inflation number, obviously, but they also put in a more realistic number for repairs and maintenance. And would you guess how much more the houses were selling for 100 years later? Guess how much?
Yeah, right around that, almost zero. I know it's.
It was the same freaking price.
Yeah.
So right there, I decided I was never gonna. If we get a large rental fleet going and there is significant appreciation, terrific. It's gravy, whatever. But I'm not gonna model my business around that because I don't believe in it.
Yep. You're right on. People that do that and hope for appreciation are the people that's the same type of people that are going to get stuck like they did in 2005-06, you know, when all of a sudden the market crashes.
And alternatively, if they buy a big package and they're on the right side of that, it can be good. I get that, but you might as well do the stock market. You can do that.
So
to answer your question more fully, if someone has professional management and is totally passive and that management provides a return anything above 5% annually, I think they're doing really well. I'm going to be disappointed if I can't generate at least 10% on the lease option model once I have enough track record and enough data to be statistically relevant. I really think it's more than twice as good as a pure rental plan.
Interesting. Well, take us into this 174 unit package that you have under contract and you're buying. And, you know, how did you get that? Yeah. What does it look like? Explain that package a little bit.
Sure. It's basically 174,000 square foot boxes in Oklahoma City. You've seen one, you've seen them all. Like I described, they're all in lower end, bluer collar neighborhoods. Some are in bad areas, but most of them are in pretty good areas. And I know that not just because I drove them all, obviously, but because these insurance ratings come back. When you have to put hazard insurance on when you get a bank loan, which of course we're leveraging this up, the insurance scores the fleet. Some houses, I can't remember the scoring right now, but are scored pretty well relative to the neighborhoods they're in. So I was pretty pleased with that. And then, so how we found out about it was basically through Homevestors. You mentioned I was part of the We Buy Ugly House thing back in 2003 for 4 years and rejoined. My brother still has that franchise. And he had heard about the package through Homevestors. Actually, we had heard about it back in 2003, but then the guy changed his mind. And this is just a one-owner guy. He's been picking up these houses for 35 years. He's 70 years old. He's tired of it. He wants to get out. But I heard through the lead through Homevestors. And then next, of course, was funding. And I had fortunately ran into my buddy who was looking to place some money, and so the timing was just right. We formed a company last October, started buying these houses. This package came around and it just fit right in. So we started the due diligence, and I went down there, and man, these people, they pay in cash. 75% of them pay in cash. I literally counted every 1, 5, 10, 20, and 100 on every rent for the entire month of June. And that's a lot of cash, but did that due diligence and then got the deal with the bank, and we're going to close Monday. So I have we're inheriting an office manager that the seller is leaving in place and that we're hiring. So she'll help quite a bit. And then, of course, I have two ladies here in the office who help me with everything I do. So part of this lease option world is developing a machine through Facebook and Craigslist and what have you to generate these tenant buyer leads so that you can place them in these homes. So you need to always be buying, of course, and then you need to have that machine built so that you can get tenants in there and just trust the market that you can find them. There's some moments where you think no one's going to lease that house, but they finally do, I promise. But you kind of got to just have a core belief that they will come. And then once the financing's in place, that's it. Now, you may do a follow-up in 9 months, and I may be crying. I don't know, but I think it's going to be okay because my investor, fortunately, is satisfied with the 5% return. He understands this, and he understands that even if we do just 5%, it's possible we will do that, but I'm going to do much better than that, of course, because I want to impress him and do some more of it.
So these are all occupied right now with current renters. So what do you do then? You just remove one renter at a time, or are you going to wipe them all? How do you do that?
So it's 90% occupied. So we'll just start with the vacants. We'll start marketing those. And then as we are successful getting those filled and new vacants come online, we'll just move those over to lease option. If we don't have enough, we'll take a look at possibly raising rents on the pure rental model, which always generates some vacancies, obviously, and then move those over and so on and so on. So just by attrition, it took me, I'm guessing it'll take 3 years to convert them all.
Okay. Yeah. Because you're not just going to wipe them out and wreck your cash flow. You're going to just slowly do it.
Right.
Try to keep your keep your 5% or better.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. And then ultimately we'll be 5 years in. They'll all be converted. We will have paid down the loan significantly, and it'll all gel and be a wonderful thing.
So what's the price on this? Or about?
The $6.4 million.
Okay. And so you're getting
about 37 house.
You're getting a bank loan.
Yes.
80%, 70%, 75%. What are they financing?
They actually did 85%.
Wow.
Yeah, they are buying the business. We got lucky there too. I'm telling you, the stars are just aligning on this deal. I've never had a deal go this well. And so, we had two banks competing with each other, and the second bank finally said, hey, what is it going to take? And we said, give us 85%, and you've got the business. And they said, okay, 4.95% interest. That's a 5-year fixed. What else?
Personal guarantees on it?
Absolutely. Absolutely, which this investor is comfortable with.
Yeah. So Scott, you said it's 37.5 a door, right? That would be right.
Approximately, yes.
Yeah. So you could sell these things too, if you can't lease option them. You could just straight sell them, and probably what are they worth if you sell one individually?
So I just got the final number on the appraisal. It's $8.8 million is what the 200 are coming in at. Now, the investor paid 1.1, so the 6.6, we're in for 7.7 on an 8.8. So it's a discount, but it's not a terrific discount.
Sure. Okay. I can't picture a $37,500 house anymore in the Twin Cities.
No, but picture a $70,000, $75,000 house in the Twin Cities.
Sure. Okay. Okay. Well, man, that just sounds fantastic. So are you still doing the hard money thing, or did you kind of push that to the side?
Yeah, we really pushed it to the side. As a matter of fact, we pulled out of Minneapolis a couple months ago. We still lend in Oklahoma City and Tulsa, and there's not that much volume here, and we're okay with the lower volume for a while. Like I said, if this lease option thing goes as well as I hope, then it's a better model anyway. However, I think we will keep lending because there's always, you know, money to be made, and I know from experience that the bubble and burst will come again, and you never know. I might come up there again. We'll see.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to scare anybody, but I do think that the dynamics are different than when I arrived in 08.
Expand on that. What do you mean?
I mean that the house prices were – the market had been so beat up. By the time I made my first loan in Minneapolis, it was 09. I think it was February. And if you go back in the charts, that's like the bottom. And so I was lending in an environment where the houses were appreciating, which made it easier. At some point, the market is going to get overheated again and you know, take another fall. And that environment is not one for it to be lending in.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a logical point for me to pull out. And the reason that's not necessary in Oklahoma is Oklahoma never had the big increase in values that Minnesota did or the coast. Therefore, it did not have the big fall that the coast or Minnesota had either. So we've been able to just lend along. Oklahoma's kind of been slow, boring growth for a long time, and have no reason to believe that won't continue to be the case.
So let's dig in to a couple other things. What would be one of your biggest mistakes that you've made in business along the way?
Biggest mistake I made was a subject to house, and the story's not over yet, but we'll see what happens. But the house was fundamentally flawed in that the builder, and the whole addition is like this, all of the retaining walls were not done correctly. And so there is some risk that the house next door is going to fall into my house. And it was fine when I structured it to the seller as a note to Red Dirt. So Red Dirt is on the note and responsible for the debt. And so it's possible I'm going to have to come out of pocket 50 or 60 grand to solve the problem. And then the dynamics of that house are just shot. You know, it'll be a long time before I crawl out of that one. The other one would be up in Minneapolis, up in Matometi. Is that how you say that?
That's where I live. Yep, Matometi.
Yeah. Thank you, Matometi. Sorry. And I've told you about that house. It's one of those where if one thing can go, if everything went wrong that could go wrong, kind of thing.
Sure.
So
sure. So you've had you did some fix and flips, you had the wholesaling business, you have the lending business, and now you've got this lease option business. So what kind of advice would you give us about operating a business successfully?
Well, obviously, I don't know if I'm the best guy to ask, but being willing to change is really important, man. The only way I could have remained a competitive hard money lender in Minneapolis, for example, was to begin doing the new construction like all the other lenders did. And they were able to keep their volume up and do the volume they needed, but they're also taking on a whole lot more risk. And I just wasn't willing to do that. So when I was looking around for something, and plus I had this problem with the 20 leftover bad loan houses that I had to solve, and it just kind of led into something else. So I guess my advice would be just keep your eyes open and try not to do too many things at once, of course, but don't be unwilling to change. I've had to survive, and in hindsight, each time I've looked back and said, thank God I did that. But it takes a while to get the courage up, you know, to make drastic changes in your business. But unfortunately, that's the deal. I mean, you just have to.
Yeah, I think too many people, I think that's great advice. Too many people look at their business and what they built and expect that they can just continue doing that and it'll be okay. And you keep on digging yourself deeper and deeper into a hole and you know, you're eventually just never going to get out of it. And so being able to be open-minded and changing, I think is great advice. Fantastic.
Yeah. And trying not to do too many things at once, you know, for a long time, I did a ton of things badly. and then I decided I wasn't going to do that anymore. And it was about the time that I started the hard money lending thing that I said, I'm really going to focus on that. And it wasn't until I decided to really focus on that one model and try to be the best at that, that I really started making some money. And so for me, that was good advice. I'm sure there's others who can multitask and do other, you know, several models at once. I'm not that kind of guy. That's why I don't mind slowing lending down to do this lease option, because I just know myself well enough. I just won't watch it as close. I just won't.
I think you're right though. I mean, I watch a lot of people that try to do everything, and typically, you know, they can do okay for themselves, but they're never getting ahead when they try to do everything.
Right. Something to be said for a one trick pony does it a million times.
Yep. Just a couple more questions for you before I let you go. What are some essential people that have gotten you to the point you're at?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I've always been able to attract good people. I was a college dropout. I went to college for 18 months and had a blast, but didn't learn a thing. And talked to my dad and he said, you really need to do better. And I said, well, you know, I can sit here and tell you that I'm going to do better, but I don't even believe it as I'm saying it. So he said, you know what? I think you are ready to go to work. And so I started work the next Monday. He owned a candy company. We actually manufactured candy and I had to wear a hairnet. It was awful. But anyway, since then I've just naturally drawn people in who are not highly educated, don't have the big fancy college degree or anything, but they're just so loyal and treat them really, really well. And then they're just wonderful to you. And hopefully they would say that I'm wonderful to work for. That's been a big key to our success has been there's very little turnover. I mean, Sandy, actually, I did have to let go, but she was with us for 10 years. And, you know, it's so hard to let someone go after 10 years, but I had to do it. But that loyalty is huge.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have to have my daughter meet up with your, is your dad still around?
Actually, no.
Oh, shoot. My daughter's 8 years old and her like dream is to open a candy shop.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So what's your favorite book, business, real estate? What's your favorite book?
I'm not much of a reader, but I sure enjoyed The E-Myth. You know, that was a good one. I like, instead of any one book or focusing on it, I just like listening to all the different, I call them wholesalers, all the different people coming in selling books and tapes. Not that I buy them, but I love listening to them. And occasionally I'll buy, you know, a small part of it and read that. Mitch Stevens is doing some cool stuff on seller financing in Texas. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
But he's very interesting. I went to a Saturday workshop for him. And so opportunities like that, I enjoy. I'm not much of a reader, though.
Okay. What's your definition to the secret of financial freedom?
Find rich people and make friends with them. I'm telling you, that is probably the biggest value looking back on it, that I've been able to talk to, you know, befriend, and entertain and enjoy people with money and treat them well and be honest, you know, treat them right. And that's unusual opportunities arise from that.
So how do you do that?
Well, you have to be likable, Todd. I can't help you there. I don't know. Just network, you know.
Yeah.
Get to know people. I don't know how I do it.
Are you saying I'm not likable?
No, I'm not at all.
Well, Scott, I appreciate your time and stories and you know, wish you the best of luck on this closing on this 174. I think it's a really exciting new chapter, expanding on the chapter of these lease options. So I know you'll do well with that. If somebody wants to reach out to you to talk or whatever, do business with you, how do they get in touch with you?
The email is my favorite. It's just scott@reddirtlending.com.
Okay. scott@reddirtlending.com. And we'll put that in the show notes. Scott, I appreciate your time and discussing with us, you know, your lending and some of your advice and these lease options and the profitability of them versus the rentals. And I know I definitely learned a lot, and probably will have to pick your ear a little bit because I've got quite a few rental single family houses. And like you said, the maintenance is probably the biggest money sucker off these rentals. So.
Right. Right.
Well, you have a great day. Thanks for your time, and we'll catch up next time.
Okay. Thanks, Todd.
Hey, a special thanks to Scott McLean for sharing his time with us. And I'm going to talk about some of the things that I took away from this, the action steps. And one of the first things he talked about is not trying to do too much at once. And Scott mentioned that, you know, he used to just try to do everything. And until he really just decided he's going to focus on his hard money lending, things really weren't doing that well for him. And so I think you got to figure out the type of person you are, but I would say majority of us need to focus on one or two things to be successful. If you're trying to do everything, especially being active in everything, you're probably not going to have a lot of success. So if you're going to focus on being a business owner and you're going to also focus on being a real estate investor, and you're also going to focus on, I guess maybe another business, have two or three businesses along with the real estate, I don't think you're going to do very well in any of them. So figure out which ones you want to be passive on and which ones you want to be active on. The other thing he talks about is shifting with the times and keeping your eyes open. I think a lot of people talk about that. Just shifting with the times, making sure you're understanding what's going on and always keeping your eyes open, always looking for what it is that is happening, because, you know, especially in certain industries, they're taken over by technology. And if you're not paying attention to what's happening, you're going to be left behind. And it doesn't matter if it's a tech-driven industry or not, no matter what, you're going to be left behind if you don't shift with the times. And it's been happening for hundreds and hundreds of years. So just make sure you're shifting with the times and always keeping your eyes open to what it is that's coming. Okay. And then the last thing he said is hang out with rich people. And definitely good advice. Find people that are really just doing well. I don't necessarily know that you have to have everybody that you hang out with rich. I mean, it's definitely nice to have people that are around you that have wealth and have had success, but you also just want to hang out with, in general, just positive people that have a good outlook on life. And so I think that was also fantastic advice. So thanks, Scott, for joining us. I'm Todd Dexheimer with Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm signing off. And remember, make every day a Saturday. Give us a 5-star rating or review If you can, go to iTunes or wherever you listen, give us a 5-star rating review and subscribe. And then also, please pass the word if you can go on to social media or whatever and just share us out to all of your friends. That would be awesome if you can go onto your Facebook or your LinkedIn or whatever you use and just share us out to everyone that you know. That would really help us get the word out and help this show. So thanks a lot and have a fantastic day. Want to learn more about real estate investing? Tune in to the best real estate investing advice ever with Joe Fairless. Joe has the longest daily running podcast on iTunes, well over 1,000 episodes. You can listen to me on Joe's podcast, episode 1015, where Joe interviews me and asks me about my best real estate investing advice. Joe has interviewed fantastic guests such as Emmett Smith, Robert Kiyosaki, Barbara Corcoran, all kinds of fantastic guests. Make sure that you go on to Joe's podcast, subscribe, give him a 5-star rating and review. You do not want to miss out on a fantastic podcast, the best real estate investing advice ever with Joe Fairless.